If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 881. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about Roman ruins, a president for life, seaside towns and hilltop villages, wineries, and truffles, as we go to the Istria Peninsula in Croatia. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Croatia. I'd like to welcome to the show Olivia from inspiredbycroatia.com, who, strangely enough, has come to talk to us about Croatia. Olivia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And then where are we talking about in Croatia today?
So today we are talking about the northwestern region of Croatia, the Istrian Peninsula. So the most western region of Croatia, which is quite popular among European travelers, but not so much yet with American tourists. So I'm really excited to share all that this beautiful area has to offer. And it's actually, if I'm allowed to say this, my favorite place in Croatia. So.
You are certainly allowed to say it. I don't know who you're going to get in trouble with for saying it, yeah. But that is something that is on you.
Maybe other Croatians.
Exactly. In terms of Croatia, what is your connection with Croatia?
So I am actually Croatian. I was born to Croatian parents in the U.S., though. So I was raised in the U.S., surrounded by Croatian culture, basically all of growing up, and we would take frequent trips back to the homeland to visit friends and family. And then in 2014, I actually decided to move to Croatia to study. And it was supposed to be a temporary year-long program that turned into nearly 10 years of me living in Croatia and calling it home.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Croatia and particularly to Istria?
I think that Istria is still a little bit underrated. Personally, I like to talk about it as this like fairy tale like region. It has quite a strong Italian heritage, somewhat reminiscent of Tuscany, but with a Croatian flair. It's filled with these emerald green hills dotted with medieval villages throughout. The food there is absolutely fantastic. If you're a foodie, you want to go to Istria, their home, to lots of truffles. So you'll find truffles in a lot of the dishes there. And then in addition to the green interior, we have the rugged coastline, rocky coastline, but beautiful blue, pristine water and beaches. And it really just has the best of both worlds.
I'm looking forward to this because that you're talking about a region that I have not been to in Croatia, although I've been just almost there as I've been in that little sliver of Slovenia just north of there.
Ah, okay.
So I've been on the peninsula, but not in the Croatian part of it.
Okay.
Very nice. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
So I have a 7-day itinerary through Istria. In Croatia, we pronounce it Istra, so you drop the second I. Okay. But the Istrian Peninsula in Croatia, we like to divide it into two areas. So you have green Istria, which is the lush green interior, and blue Istria, okay. which is the coastline. Okay. So this itinerary will combine about 4 or 5 days on the coast and then 2 or 3 days in the interior.
Excellent. Where are we going to start?
So we are going to start in Pula. This is probably the most famous and most well-known town in Istria to travelers. It is the biggest, and it also has an airport. So if you were flying into Croatia, you could fly into Pula, or you could fly into Zagreb and then rent a car from Zagreb and drive about 3 hours to get to Pula. So when you fly in, you're going to need to rent a car because this itinerary is like a 7-day road trip through Istria. You could technically maybe visit some places with buses, but I wouldn't say that they're all very well connected with either like public transportation or the bus system. So it's best to have your car for these 7 days. But we'll
start. My experience at driving with Croatia was not very intimidating. And so I'm assuming that's the same up in Istria.
Yes, actually, the roads are very well maintained. When you get into the interior, you might come across some little narrow country roads. But for the most part, I think driving in Croatia is pretty manageable.
Okay.
So yeah, so the first day we'll start in Pula. This is the largest city in Istria. It's pretty industrial, so you'll see a lot of shipbuilding that dominates the harbor. But that's not where you're going to be spending your time. You'll be spending your time in the interior of the city. And the number one thing to see here is the Roman Arena. So this Roman amphitheater was constructed in 27 BC, and it is one of the best preserved arenas outside of Italy. And it's the only one in the world to have 4 entirely preserved side towers. So very impressive to see from the outside. It almost feels like you're in Rome. It is a bit smaller than the Colosseum, but it is very cool to see. You can walk around the outside. I would recommend going inside. And if you're into history, get a guide or bring a guidebook because the signage, it doesn't go super in depth if you wanted to learn more about the background of the arena, but definitely worth going inside. You can also go underground to the underground corridors that were once used by gladiators, and they've turned that into an exhibit of viticulture and olive growing in ancient times. Okay. And then there's also some artifacts there, like the amphora that have been dug up and things like that. The arena today is used as a concert venue, so it can hold up to 20,000 visitors. And if you're lucky, you might even be in town for the Pula Film Festival, which is usually held in July. And you can catch a movie in the arena for only €5. It is a very cool experience to be watching a film on this big screen surrounded by all of this ancient history. Yeah, very cool experience. After that, there are a number of other historic sites that are worth visiting in Pula, including the Temple of Augustus, which is on the town's main square, the ancient Roman Forum. That is like the heartbeat of the city where the locals meet up. You'll see a lot of people sitting on the steps of the temple, drinking coffee, eating ice cream, watching the world go by. So it's a great place to partake in that Croatian coffee culture where you order coffee and you sit there and sip it for an hour or two, just relaxing and kind of taking in the sights around you, people watching. A really nice spot for a break. In Pula, there's also the Museum of Olive Oil, where you can learn more about the production of olive oil, learn how to properly taste it. And there is also the castle, which
is... Can you say properly taste it? This leads me to believe that I've probably been doing it wrong. How does one properly taste olive oil?
So when you taste olive oil, I actually did this for the first time last year. They do it in these little glasses. They are blue. It almost looks like a shot glass, but it's a little bit bigger. And they pour a little bit of olive oil in it. And they teach you how to properly smell it, which scents to look out for, to identify different aromas. And then the way you taste it is pretty particular, similar to tasting wine. It's quite interesting. I wish I could be a little bit more technical, but I have only done this once, so I'm not an expert, but it's definitely worth it, especially if you like olive oil, and Istria is well known for their olive oil. There are tons of olive producers in the area, and that'll also be a really great souvenir to take home with you is a bottle of olive oil.
Okay.
After that, you can visit the castle, which is an old Venetian fortress, and there's a museum inside and really nice views of the city. And you can spend the rest of the day either getting lost in Pula, or you can drive to the nearby Verudela Peninsula. It's about a 15-minute drive for a dip in the sea if you wanted to do some swimming. This is a really nice area that is covered in pine tree forests, and it's dotted with some pretty nice resorts. Most of the beaches there are rocky, so if you're not used to rocky beaches, you might want to bring some water shoes. If you want to blend in with the locals, though, don't bring water shoes because the locals don't wear them. We like pain. But this is a really great opportunity to do some cliff jumping, if that's what you like, diving. Seagulls Rocks, the beautiful rocky bay with Gatorade blue colored water, and it's full of unique sea caves. And a popular activity to do there is to rent a kayak and explore the coastline. You can go into the caves, and it's a very cool experience. And another beach in that area, if you'd rather not cliff jump, is Hawaii Beach, which got its name because of the large waves that crash up onto the shore. Although I don't really think that those waves are the size of the ones that you'd see in Hawaii, but I guess for Croatian standards, they are pretty big. And it's a lovely little pebbled cove nestled into these high rocks. So that's a nice place to hang out and catch some sun.
Okay. With that beautiful... Yeah. Aquamarine, mm-hmm. Croatian coastline water there.
Yes. So on day two, you are going to drive about 15 minutes north to the village of Fajana. And from there, you'll take a day trip to Brioni National Park. So this is an archipelago of about 14 islands. They are filled with untouched nature, rich history, ancient Roman ruins. The largest island was actually the official residence of the former Yugoslavian president for 3 decades. And for that reason, a lot of the visitors, the world leaders that came to visit him, they would bring an animal. So you have animals from all over the world, like exotic animals like zebras, elephants, animals that don't normally live in Croatia. They all live there because they would bring those animals as gifts. So they have this like safari park where you can go and explore. And it's really fun for kids too, because you see all the animals. The price of your ticket to the islands includes a round trip ferry ride, and then also a local guide once you get onto the island. And the guide is actually with you for quite a long time. So I was recently there, and I'd say at least 4 hours, maybe more, if you want. It's optional, but I do recommend at least doing part of the tour, because you'll get a lot more out of your visit and learn about the history and some different facts that you probably wouldn't be able to discover on your own. So the tour includes a train ride around the island. You pass by all of these important sites and learn a bit more.
And when you say a train, we're talking about the little tourist train.
It's like a little tourist train. So they take you around. And then after the tour, you can either rent a golf cart. Those are pretty popular to rent. Or you could rent a bike and just ride around and explore on your own, revisit sites that you saw on the tour that you thought were interesting. You can go to the beach. They have a few designated swimming areas where you can go for a swim. There are also dinosaur footprints on the island. These islands have a pretty rich history. And the remains of an ancient Roman villa, and also a 1,600-year-old olive tree that still produces olives to this day. So it was actually very cool to see. You can only see it from a distance. You're not allowed to like go up and pick olives, but it is pretty cool. And then once you end your day...
And you said that this is the home...
Was the home Tito.
We didn't name him, but there's nobody else who was the leader of Yugoslavia for 30 years, because without him, it fell apart. Is that still something there that you can visit, or is it still there or not?
They do have a museum dedicated to him and his life. They also have his car there, which you can rent for a pretty penny if you'd like to ride around in a piece of history. So yeah, they do have a little museum there that the tour will actually take you to, and then you'll get some time to walk around inside if you'd like to learn more.
Okay, yeah. Interesting.
And then once you come back to the mainland, there is a really fantastic family-run restaurant in Fajana, the village that you departed from. It is called Ala Bekacha, And it's the kind of place that is super cozy and rustic. When you walk inside, there's a big fireplace in the middle of the restaurant where they grill the fish and the meat. And there is no set menu. Rather, the owner comes over to your table and he sits down with you and chit-chat and figures out what you want to eat, what's on the menu for today. So it's a really nice local experience. They have delicious food. The pasta is incredible. And they also serve locally made wine and spirits. So it's a really nice way to end your second day in Istra.
Excellent.
After that, we're going to head north to the town of Rovin. This is a charming little fishing village that I could best describe as love at first sight. It is so charming and colorful and romantic and just incredibly photogenic. The town is small enough to be seen in a single day, but just the maze of cobblestone streets and the hidden piazzas and alleyways will make you want to stay for much, much longer. So we'll be spending 2 days here. The first day you'll be exploring the town of Rovin, and I recommend just letting your feet lead the way. You'll discover all sorts of unique little corners of the town, hidden ateliers. There's lots of artists there as well. You can pop into different shops, captivating seaside cafes, delicious restaurants. Be sure to stop.
This looks like one of those cities you couldn't possibly get lost in. The church is up, the water is down.
It is, yes. But you'd be surprised. And there's lots of little...
3 blocks long, yeah.
You'd be surprised. There's lots of little winding alleyways that kind of take you to these hidden corners. But very cute and charming. I'd recommend stopping in at Mediterraneo Bar. It is this little seaside cafe that you might pass up. It's a charming little seaside cafe that is located through, it's almost like a tunnel, through a building that leads out to the sea. So from one of the inside walkways, you lead out and you emerge on the cliffside of the town, overlooking the water, and the cafe is built into the rocks with these little stone terraces. It is quite small. If you're lucky, definitely grab a table there. It's a really lovely spot to just enjoy a drink or a coffee overlooking the water. Other notable sights to see in Rovin is the church. That is the most famous landmark in town, and it has apparently the highest bell tower in all of Istra at 61 meters tall. So you can climb up to the top. There's beautiful views from up there. And yeah, just wander around town, go to Grisia Street, which is a street of cascading stone steps that's lined with like local boutiques and art shops. And in August, they actually host an open air art exhibition. And it's really cool because you'll just see all of this amazing art hanging from these ancient stone walls. You can either just walk around and admire the artwork. You could buy something to take home with you if you wanted something special from Rovin. But yeah, it's a really nice time to be in town. And then after exploring Rovin for the day, on day 4, you're going to head to the Lim Fjord, or also known as the Lim Channel. This is like a 13-kilometer long sunken karst valley, and it was declared a special marine reserve. What's special about it is it's made of a mixture of salty and sweet water, which makes the perfect breeding ground for shellfish, particularly mussels and oysters. So if you do love seafood, a great place to come and try some fresh shellfish is at the restaurant Viking, located on the inside of the channel. And then you can also take boat tours through the Lim Fjord, which takes you like from where it opens at sea all the way to the end. And usually they'll include snacks, some wine, maybe a traditional lunch, and then you'll also get some swimming time. So it's a nice place to cruise down. It's lined with all this greenery. Very beautiful. And then after that, I would recommend heading to the nearby town of Bale. It is this very charming hilltop village, smaller than Rovin. It is located, I think, like 140 meters above sea level, and it's surrounded by all of these vineyards and olive groves and just made up of these tiny cobblestone streets that wind around a castle. And you can just wander around there, pop into different shops selling handcrafted wares. Over there, you could probably pop into somewhere where you can try some olive oil, score a little tasting. But in that area, other than visiting the town, I would definitely visit one of the local wineries. So there are two wineries close to Bale, which are San Tommaso Winery and Meneghetti Winery. Meneghetti is ultra luxurious, beautiful. It's everything you imagine when you're dreaming of Tuscany, but you're in Croatia. Definitely a nice place. Definitely a nice place to go for a wine tasting. You could even stay there if you're looking for a more luxurious vacation. Yeah, it's a really nice spot to check out.
Okay.
On day five, you'll head up to Poric. So this is a seaside town that is quite popular among European travelers. A lot of Germans and Austrians and Italians also enjoy coming here. There's lots of resorts and nice beaches, lots of outdoor activities. If you're into history, definitely check out the 6th century Euphrasian Basilica. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's definitely the most well-known site in town and worth visiting. It's this ancient complex. You can walk around and see the Byzantine mosaics inside, and then you can also climb up to the top of the tower and get some pretty nice views of Poric.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping is always curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
When you're done, you can stroll down the main Roman street, Decumanus. It's lined with ice cream parlors, souvenir shops, little restaurants, and it's a nice little stroll leading to the remains of the old Roman Forum. And then if you're up for some swimming, you can spend the afternoon walking along the Riviera. They have a really nice seaside walkway dotted with beaches on one side, forest on the other side if you want some shade. Yeah, a really nice swimming spot. And then after Poric, you go a little bit further north to Umag, which is a laid-back seaside town, and it is most well-known for hosting the Croatia Open Umag, which is Croatia's oldest and most famous tennis tournament. So this town has lots of sports activities, tennis courts, beaches, water sports. If you're into tennis, you definitely might want to stop by for the Croatia Open. In addition to the tournament, they have lots of events and concerts and stuff going on at that time as well.
You have pretty much run out of Croatia coastline at that point.
Basically, yes. You could go a little bit further north to Savudrija if you wanted to. There is the oldest lighthouse in Croatia up there. It's nice. It's very small. There's a really beautiful hotel up there, Kempinski, if you wanted to have more of a relaxing resort-style luxury vacation. They have incredible food. Very peaceful. There's a golf course up there if you're into golfing as well. But yes, by that point, we've run out of Croatian coastlines.
Then you have to go listen to the Slovenia episode if you want to
exactly.
keep
it. Exactly.
Yes. Or Trieste, because you don't get very much Slovenia there before you're go. Back in Italy. Yeah. So.
Yep. But before going to the interior, before heading into Green Istra, I wanted to recommend a lunch spot in Umag. It's called Kono Banono, which is like a traditional Istrian tavern. And it is one of my favorite restaurants. It is very rustic and it's decorated with these huge glass bottles that are used for making rakia and other spirits in Istria. And they serve freshly caught and prepared fish and other traditional Istrian dishes like boshkarin, which is a type of Istrian beef that they make in this really delicious red sauce with usually homemade gnocchi or some kind of homemade noodles. They have great wine and it's a really nice spot to end the day.
Okay.
And then now we'll head into Green Istria. And this is day 6. So you'll be visiting 3 small hilltop towns. They're not too far from each other. So the first one you'll stop in is Motovun. And this is probably the most well-known town of the region. It sits at about 270 meters above sea level. So this is like a very charming hilltop village. I think it was built like in the 14th century by the Venetians, and it's surrounded by this wall that you can actually walk around. I believe it's free to walk around the wall. And as you stroll along the perimeter, you can look down to the rolling vineyards, the valleys, the Mirna River, and then the dense forests of the area that produce Istria's award-winning truffles. If you didn't know.
And I'd have to say, looking at a picture of this, it looks like a Tuscan town,
exactly.
Except that your hillsides are forested.
Yes, exactly. Yes, very charming. Very and a few famous people have graced this little town, including the famous Anthony Bourdain, who came to try truffles at Kono Bamondo. It's another really nice tavern in town that serves up traditional Istrian food. And it's a great place to stop for lunch. They have a nice shaded terrace, which is really beautiful on a summer day. You can enjoy a glass of wine and taste the truffle dishes on the menu. And another person worth mentioning is the Italian race car driver, Mario Andretti, who was actually born in Motovun. And there's a little museum
and
dedicated to
I think a lot of people, you're getting too old for most of our audience.
Yeah, they may not know who he is. I remember my mom used to tell me growing up, oh, Mario Andretti, he was born in Croatia, but he says he's Italian. But yes, that area was once part of Italy. So yeah, you can walk through. There's a little museum dedicated to him. And in the summer, there's actually the Motovun Summer Film Festival, which is one of the most popular events in the area. And it is quite nice to visit. It gets pretty busy and you can go and see movies from all over the world there. A lot of locals like to go. Definitely a nice spot to check out.
And I want to say the name of the language in Croatia, but that's a tricky question. So some people would call it Serbo-Croatian, but in Croatia, we call it Croatian?
Yes.
Okay. And my Croatian is not that good. Am I going to get subtitles on my movies when I go to the film festivals?
Usually there are subtitles. So if not, you could use it as an opportunity to learn a new language.
And I say the name of the language is sensitive politically because depending where you are in this region, and of course, we did have some tensions in this region after the breakup of Yugoslavia and war. And so the same language or a language that people can talk and converse is not called the same thing in every region there.
Exactly.
To be a little sensitive to that.
Yeah, we like to differentiate ourselves. Although, yes, you could probably understand most words in both languages.
Yeah, someone once described a language is a dialect with a flag.
Interesting. It's a good way to put it. All right. After Motovun, you're going to stop in another hilltop town by the name of Grožnjan. Not very easy to pronounce, but
I'll have the names of all of these in the show notes for those of you who are keeping score at home and trying to take notes of your road trip.
Yeah, Grožnjan is a little bit smaller than Motovun, but I actually prefer it to Motovun. It is incredibly charming. It is a haven for artists and musicians from all over the region. So in the 1950s, many artists were attracted to Grožnjan's medieval appeal, and they began opening up ateliers in the town's abandoned buildings. And from that point, it just became known as the town of artists. So from about May And throughout the summer, there'll be different workshops for musicians, for actors, for artists. And they come to Grosjean and spend the summer there to learn and to study. So when you're walking through the cobblestone streets of the town, it's not uncommon to hear the sounds of jazz and classics and people singing and playing guitar. It's really nice.
And when you say atelier, for those who did not score quite as high as you on the verbal SAT, we're talking about workshops or studios.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent.
While you're in Grosjean, I would recommend stopping into Truba Jazz and Wine Bar for a drink or for a snack. Truba in English means trumpet. So the entire place is decorated in this music theme. There's instruments on the wall. There's this really cool black and white mural of musicians playing. It's just got a really nice ambiance, and I think it really embodies the spirit of the town. And then you'll end your day in Green Istra with a visit to Momjan. And I would end it at the restaurant Konobastari Podrum. It is an Istrian tavern. And if you've noticed a trend, there's a lot of great food in Istra. So definitely recommend Konobastari Podrum. It is very popular among locals, like Croatians that don't live in Istra. A lot of people around Zagreb, they'll go take a weekend trip to Istra, and a lot of people flock to this particular restaurant. It's worth the trip. The food is out of this world. They have a beautiful glass enclosed terrace. The dishes are everything from, everything has truffles on it, or not. If you would prefer it without truffles, you can request that. But if you haven't tried truffles, this is a great place to try them.
I just think it's funny when you have to request no truffles when you're in a truffle region. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Do they look at you strangely? Like, I don't understand why you would not want truffles.
You know what? I don't know, because I've never ordered anything without truffles.
Fair enough. Okay.
But it is an acquired taste. So I do understand some people might not like truffles, but this is a great place to try anything with truffles. They also have some other good dishes as well. And once you've finished up your meal, you can head right next door to Kozlovich Winery. And it is one of the best wineries in the region. The property is modern and stunning. They have the most beautiful outdoor patio. You can go in for a wine tasting and a tour of the facilities, or you can just order a glass or two of wine and enjoy it on the terrace. They have a really good Moscato if you like a little bit of a sweeter wine. And it's just a really nice place to watch the sunset over the vineyards with a glass of wine in hand. Highly recommend.
Excellent.
And yeah, I believe that brings us to our last day in Istra. So day 7. You will make your way to the town of Buzet, and this is a small town. You could probably walk through it in a few minutes, but the real reason we're heading there is to visit the headquarters of the Aura Distillery. This is a family-run distillery that produces brandies, liqueurs, gins from wild herbs and fruits harvested from the Istrian region. So you'll find their shops all over the Istrian Peninsula, but their headquarters in particular is worth a visit. The employees, I don't know if I would say employees. So the family there will open you with open arms, give you a tour of the distillery, explain the production process, and they will let you try everything in their shop. I kid you not, anything you want to try, you will try it. They'll let you sample all of their products from their famous Teranino, which is a red wine liqueur, to various brandies, gin, chocolate, ice cream. They'll even give you a little tasting platter with the local prosciutto and cheese and olives and olive oil and homemade bread. It is absolutely delicious, and you won't be able to leave here without buying something to take home with you. So it's a great place to pick something up for the road or to bring back home. They also have a little garden out front, an herb garden, where you can enjoy a drink. They will make a drink for you and concoct a cocktail that you can sip outside on the patio. It's really nice. And then after that, you'll head to Karlić Tartufi or Karlić Truffles. Karlić is the last name of the family that owns this place. So if you haven't already gotten this from our conversation, or if you didn't know, Istra is very famous for its truffles. You'll find
if you haven't picked that up by now, you really haven't been listening. So
Yes. Actually, they say that a lot of the truffles that are harvested or found in Istria are actually exported to Italy and sold as Italian truffles. Maybe you've already tried them if you've been eating Italian truffles. But yeah, Carliche Tartufi, this is a really great spot to come and try truffles. And you can also go truffle hunting with the family. They have 9 dogs, I believe. I think there were 9 when I was there that are trained specifically to hunt for truffles. So you'll go out with them into the forest with the dog and you'll learn about truffles, truffle hunting. And then if you're lucky, you might find a truffle or two. Obviously, it's not guaranteed. It depends on a lot of factors. But either way, whether or not you find a truffle, once you're back at the property, they'll have a little cooking demonstration for you. They have a really nice in-house restaurant. And then you'll finally get to taste the truffle dishes. And at their shop, they also have all sorts of truffle products from popcorn, cheese, sauces, just anything that you could think of, topped with truffles, coated in truffles, they've got it there. And then after
that, with the truffle hunting, I don't know of any special type of dog that one uses for truffle hunting. So is it a variety of dogs that all have good smells, or is it the kind of tracking dogs you would normally see, or what kind of dog does one use for truffle hunting? One's not using a pig like in France.
That's a good question. They did have all different types of dogs there. So it wasn't like one specific breed. I do know a lot of it is the training. And I think they do actually offer training if you, for example, had a dog that you wanted to train for truffle hunting. I think they offer like the ability to train them for you. But I'm not sure if there's a particular set of breeds that they usually gravitate to. I'm not too sure. Okay. And then after you're done truffle tasting, we'll make our way to the smallest town in the world, Hum, literally spelled H-U-M, like hum. There's a legend behind the town that says that giants built the town when they were building other hilltop towns in the area, in the Mirna Valley. And unfortunately, they ran out of stones. So that is why Hum turned out to be so miniature and small. They are only 30 inhabitants that live in the town, and you could probably walk around it in maybe less than 10 minutes, depending on your pace. So it is a short stop, but it is very cute and charming to walk through nonetheless. One interesting thing about the town is that they really hold on to their customs and traditions. So every year you can actually witness the town mayor being elected in the old-fashioned way, which is with 11 local judges carving their votes into a wooden stick.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on the way
to Does that to mean home, people with shorter names tend to win more often?
Maybe. Yeah, there's not a lot of room. Another spot worth checking out near Hum or on the way to Hum from Carliche Truffles is the little village of Kotli. And it reminds me of Pamukkale in Turkey, the travertine pools, although a much, much smaller version. So Kotli is home to a series of waterfalls and small pools that cascade over these large white rocks. But the best time to visit is in the spring or fall when there is more water. I happened to be there in the heart of summer, so the pools weren't as full, but you can go swimming there if you wanted to. And there is a little rustic cafe also built into the side where you can enjoy a drink and listen to the water fall over the rocks. It's a really nice and unique stop.
Excellent.
And I think that brings us to the end of our 7 days in Istria.
It's too soon.
Yeah, it is.
I'm sorry. This is one of those episodes I've really enjoyed, and I feel like I was just about to start looking for airfare. So,
awesome.
Anything else that somebody needs to know before we get to our wrap-up questions before they head to Istria?
Anything else they need to know? I don't think so. I don't think I have any like particular advice about Istria that is very different from the rest of Croatia. You could very easily extend your trip if you wanted to.
Sure.
There's lots of other things to do and see. Every time I go, and I usually try to go at least once per year, sometimes multiple times per year, but it's always too short of a visit, always discovering unique things. And by having your own car, it's easy to stop at different places along the way that you see, pull over, get out, do a quick look, and it's nice to be flexible that way.
And obviously, if you have more time, you can also combine with this with a road trip either up into Italy or Slovenia mm-hmm. or to the rest of Croatia that we have information about on the website as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. As we get to our wrap-up questions, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Istria.
Okay.
Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Ooh, this is a tough question. There's a lot of pretty spots.
Because which of these pretty towns yeah. are you looking at?
I would probably be standing in Grožnjan, surrounded okay. by the cobblestone streets, the music in the air, maybe holding a glass of wine, looking out into the valleys below. Yeah, maybe there.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't tell what your answer was going to be because there were a lot of pretty things as I was following along with you mm-hmm. here, and I think people will find the same thing. This would be a great episode to make sure that you have a version of the podcast player where you can see the photos if you're downloading this in the first month that it is released. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Istria.
Oh, only in Istria. There's truffles on everything. I don't know.
When you say truffles on everything, what's the most surprising thing you've ever seen truffles on?
Oh. Chocolate? Ice cream? Yeah. Some combinations that you would never imagine could be possible. But they work somehow.
Huh.
Surprisingly.
Interesting. That would surprise me. Excellent. If you had to summarize Istria in just three words, what three words would you use?
Ooh. Fairy tale.
Okay.
Romantic.
You can claim that as one word or two words here.
Oh, that's a good question.
You're going to hyphenate that one?
Yeah, I'll hyphenate it. Fairy tale.
Okay.
Romantic and rustic.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Olivia from inspiredbycroatia.com. And Olivia, if we wanted to send people to your best post on Croatia, specifically mm-hmm. on Istria, where are we going to send them?
I actually have a 7-day Istria itinerary on the blog, which you can basically follow along the itinerary that we talked about today, almost to a T. I did throw in some bonuses for the episode, but you can get everything that you need for planning the perfect 7 days in Istria on that blog.
I was going to say, you mean they didn't have to listen to any of this?
Okay, no, I threw in some bonuses.
Excellent. Excellent. Olivia, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for Croatia and for Istria.
Thank you so much for having me.
Special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. On the show that we did recently on Sonoma Valley, I heard from Patricia, who has joined me on two different Amateur Traveler trips, said my favorite wine is Loxton Cellars. The owner's family had a winery in Australia for many years, and he is a chemist who decided to go back to winemaking. After two trips to the area, it is the only wine club I joined. Nothing fancy, just great wine. Also, both CIAs are worth the visit. Thanks, Patricia. And when she says CIA, she means the Culinary Institute of America. She's not talking about spies. And then I also heard from Justin recently who said, hey, Chris, thank you for all the hard work you put into your show. I always feel like I'm fully immersed in each destination and your analytical style is very enjoyable. Your show was my top podcast on Spotify Wrapped, clocking in at just over 4,000 minutes. You have definitely made my long commute more enjoyable and inspired me to continue to seek out more travel destinations. As a solo traveler, for the most part, I always feel confident I can take on any destination after listening to your show. Justin, thanks so much. I suspect that is going to make it into my media kit. That is very quotable. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more.